Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Toth of PaleoParents.com. You might know me as one of the co-authors to Eat Like a Dinosaur, Beyond Bacon, or the upcoming Real Life Paleo books. But what you'll find out on this show is that I really like to talk about tangents and soapboxes, and definitely about lifting heavy things.
And I'm Dr. Sarah Ballantyne of ThePaleoMom.com. I'm the author of two books, The Paleo Approach and the upcoming companion guide, The Paleo Approach Cookbook. I'm a huge nutrient density geek, and I just can't help talking about science.
News and Views, where Sarah and I catch up, and you get to listen to our gossip.
So, do you want to know something super embarrassing?
Always.
So, you know the Skype ring?
Yeah.
So, as you, rung me, I suddenly found myself, dancing to the Skype ring.
You are such a geek.
I was, rocking out to the Skype ring.
Well, you ruined, I was going to start the call with a fun factoid. But you totally one-upped me, or usurped me. I wouldn't say it's a one-up. I think mine's still better. I've been eating so much fish this week.
Could that be influenced by a certain podcast?
Perhaps. I may have been influenced. Well, you know what? It's nothing I didn't already know. It just is a good reminder. And we opened this, giant can of fish that we'd gotten from Costco, who knows when. It's just the scary can of fish that was being saved.
Costco, giant, yeah.
Yeah, being saved for the apocalypse.
Being 50 people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I was responsible for eating the entirety of that can last week.
That's a lot of fish.
Oh my gosh.
What kind of fish was tuna?
Yeah. So I got to Thursday and I told Matt, I can't do fish anymore. I don't care if it's not gone. Somebody else has to eat it. I can't do it anymore.
I'm picturing you having bawling your, the way I would have these breakdowns when I was doing the Paleo Approach, I just can't do it all. But the fish version, I can't eat it all.
Yeah, pretty much that's how it went. But I have been doing a lot of variety of seafood as well. It's just that can of that Costco size can of tuna last week almost killed me.
Can I tell you my fish story, which is not as impressive as yours? But so we don't eat a lot of poultry in our house, in large part because I eventually learned that it's even pasture raised chicken is really high in omega 6s. And I put a lot of effort into balancing omega 6s and 3s. So chicken's sort of a treat in our house, but my kids both eat it really well. So I made chicken Thursday night before going on my trip to Reno so that I could leave my husband and the girls with chicken to eat while I was gone. And then I flew to Reno. So I paid $15 extra a night for a room that had a mini fridge and a microwave. So then what I did after checking in was went to Whole Foods, and the there's not that many hot bar items at Whole Foods that are really, really safe from a, both a paleo standpoint and a nightshade standpoint. And I really didn't want to have reactions while I was traveling. So I was really careful. So I got unseasoned rotisserie chicken, and then I got a ton of vegetables and fruit. So then I ate chicken that night for supper, and then the next morning for breakfast. And by the afternoon, I was starting to break out. I'm this is unusual for me now that things seem to be settling down. And so that night, I was sort of on my own for supper. And I decided that I would get sushi because I wasn't too far from a sushi place. And I basically loaded up on sashimi. And I woke up the next morning and my skin was completely clear. And I was aha, it was an omega-6 causing inflammation issue from all the chicken.
Booyachaka.
And a point in the sushi column.
Speaking of eating.
Well, okay. So I think that our topic for tonight's show is a really good one. And I think that our listeners are going to be really happy to hear us tackle this topic. And I think we've got plans to tackle it from a few different angles, which will be really cool. But it's also one of those like huge admission type shows, I think, for both of us.
Okay, wait. Before we get there.
Yeah.
Can we talk about my 480-pound farmer's field?
Oh, did you? That was like ridiculous. That has nothing to do with food. Why do you say, speaking of food, I lifted 400?
Because I was chewing food because I'm recovering from my wad by having my dinner, and I still had salad in my mouth.
I thought you were like segueing to the show's topic.
That would have been smart, but
like
no.
Segue, but no, you got a whole like,
I was trying to
world that you lifted 480 pounds for 11 seconds.
Yeah, well, and that was after I had lifted 400 pounds for 24 seconds. No, I lifted 400 pounds, and then I did 440, and then 460, and then 480, and all the times before it, I had done it for 24 seconds, and then the 480, I held it for 11 seconds. I'm pretty stoked. That's awesome. It was elevated. It was elevated by a 45 pound plate, which I think is about 4 inches. So, I couldn't lift that much off the ground, but still nonetheless super excited.
So, but
about
still
that.
4 inches. I mean, that give, it, I would imagine it's not so much giving you the boost from off the ground so much as making sure that you don't blow out your knees. Like, that seems like a safety precaution.
Oh,
480 pounds is huge.
Yeah, it's awesome. I'm super stoked.
You going to be lifting cars next?
I don't know. I mean, I supposedly I could already lift a car. People who I compete with, like in the competition that I won, have been lifting sheds with no problem. But like, we don't have that where we are. We don't have a car or
a
shed.
Next time you're a car stuck in a pothole.
Yeah. Well, if only I had my lever. Yeah, also, I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about something super exciting that I figured out about this book that we're writing. I'm in the phase of book writing where we're actually writing it and discovering new things and we're interested by it and we're not yet editing and hating it yet. So I apologize.
Which is maybe where I'm at.
Right. We get there. It's peaks and valleys, friends.
Yeah.
So I wanted to share with everyone like some super exciting things because we finally settled on how many recipes we were going to have. We finalized all of them, and it's been a concerted effort on both of our parts to make recipes that we really hope will be helpful for people. Like, we feel like if you're sitting out to write a book called Real Life Paleo, like, it better hold up to its name. Because I think, you know, I don't just want it to be like a title that I think is interesting. We really are trying to make the book for real life. And so there's 175 recipes. First of all,
ooh,
let's just stop and think about that for a minute. That's a lot of recipes. And that's not including like spice blends and how to's and how to put meals together and a definition of all the phases and like all that kind of stuff. Okay, that's 175 recipes. And then of those, you'll be excited about this, Sarah, 144 of them are nightshade free.
Wow.
Right? Because that's how we
eat. Like exciting for me because like I have really serious issues with nightshades.
Well, and a lot of the people who go through autoimmune, that's usually the last thing that they don't
need to enter back.
Right.
Or the thing they figure out is really they can't. Yeah.
Or you can moderate with, you know, some eggs or some nuts, but a lot of people, anyway. So, and a lot of paleo books rely very heavily on nightshades. So we're excited that we feel like by making it so not nightshade heavy, that there will be a lot of new and interesting flavors and foods for people. There's 109 nut-free, but a lot of those can be made nut-free by substituting sunflowers or something. There's 116 egg-free, a lot more than that if you don't count mayo, because we use mayo a lot, and that has egg yolks. So if someone only has a problem with egg whites, they would be able to eat more than that. We have over 80 recipes that you can make in under 30 minutes. We have 70 recipes that have 5 ingredients or less. We have over 80 recipes that can be made in one pot. And then the most exciting, my personal excitement, is that we have almost twice as many recipes that we call phase three, which are like the super foods, the nutrient dense paleo approach type foods, then we have treat foods in the recipe, what we call phase one foods. So, you know, if you have three phase paleo and you know what we're talking about, or we say, you know, kind of get rid of gluten and yucky foods first and then kind of transition into a paleo lifestyle. And part of what we encourage people to do is figure out substitutions of foods and offer them things like cookies and waffles that are more paleoized, and then kind of teach them that those foods aren't everyday foods and that you can even get away with them, get away from them entirely, save for maybe holidays or something. So, you know, we try to show that shift in the book, and I'm was super excited when we put the list together that it came out shaped representative of what we were articulating in the front half of the book, which is that, you know, food can be for real people. It can be relatively quick. It can be relatively easy. It can be, you know, ingredients that almost anyone can eat, allergen friendly. And we're offering a lot of foods that are not necessarily treat foods. They don't have sweeteners. They don't have a lot of other stuff in them, so that we feel like we're really offering a healthy approach to a paleo lifestyle, hence the name Real Life Paleo. So super, super excited about that. I know that that just is kind of a teaser and that I'm not really being specific about recipes, although we did put up a post in the blog last week when we called for recipe testers. At this point, it's too late, sorry. But you can see a lot more food photos and get a little teasing there if you're looking for more insight. I will tell you that Amy just keeps getting better and better. The ones that we shared, what, a month or two ago, we've continued to shoot since then, and we're in a groove, and spring sunlight's out and makes photos look so much better. So yeah, that's my Real Life Paleo spiel. I highly encourage you to go pre-order this book as well as Sarah's Paleo Approach Cookbook, because as we mentioned a bazillion times before, you get lowest price guarantee and you don't have to pay until it ships. Okay, I won't be a used car salesman anymore.
Adding my book into that. That was awesome.
You're welcome.
I had a week and a half between when I turned in the book and when I started getting pieces back from edit, which you probably know is unusual, but as our publisher was telling me tonight on the phone when he asked for more stuff before I go to bed tonight, that we've learned a very big lesson from the paleo approach, and that is that we can't do the normal, like, this person does a job and then the book goes to this person, and that person does a job and the book goes to this person, and this person does a job. And so we're breaking it out into different, like, basically different pieces of the book are going through different parts of the entire process all at once. And so, like, literally it's an edit with two different editors, and I'm now editing pieces that are sent back to me, and it's also in design all at the same time. And this is great because it means that it will actually make it to the printer on time, even though it's going to be huge. But I was really hoping for a longer break. So, I'm in the, and my publisher wants some stuff back tonight, and then one of the editors wants some stuff back by tomorrow night, and tomorrow night was supposed to be date night, and I'm feeling all rebellious. I'm thinking about doing date night anyway, because we were gonna go see Captain America 2, and, like, we've already lined up a babysitter, and we lined up the babysitter, like, before I got anything back from the editors, and I'm like, except that we might have tornadoes. So if we have tornadoes, I don't think date night.
Yeah, I don't think
a thing. There's something about being separated from your children when tornadoes are ripping through your state that feels really, really wrong. So that might force me to work
more. Maybe just a little bit.
Yeah, can I tell you something?
Hmm.
I was just going to say one thing. You were right, and I was wrong.
Oh my goodness. About what?
About recipe editing.
I just,
if you would see me, I just did that hand thing where I like raised my hand in the air and flicked my wrist like, oh yeah.
I really feel like I could have benefited from a list of instructions before I typed up all the recipes. That would be saving me probably 100 hours of work right now. And I will know for the next book, but the whole learning curve thing, not a fan.
I got news for you. It doesn't get any easier with the next books because I've talked to everybody who's done 2 or 3 books and they're like, you think you'd learn after the first time. No, recipe editing.
Well, there's certain things. Like I got the first 3 chapters back from edit Sunday, I guess. And I haven't, because I'm still going through a bunch of the recipes for the other editor, but there's actually way less edits than there was in the Paleo Approach. And I don't think it's because I have a editor who's any less particular about language. So I think it's more just that my writing has improved. And so what the editor has to work with is better. Yeah. I'm at that stage, but can I tell you something really cool?
Why do you keep asking me that? Like, I'm stuck here with you for an hour. Me and, like, you know, 10K plus of our best friends. Sure, tell us.
I've spent too much time with my kids who preface everything with, Mom, can I tell you something? Mom, can I tell you something? Mom, and then you have to say yes. You can't just nod or go, mm-hmm, because they don't hear that. You have to say, yes, tell me something. So apparently I've been overcompensating with the kid time after being away all weekend. And you know what's really funny? Just, like, I totally forgot what I was going to say. Oh yeah. No, I remember now. So I have been doing this hormone balancing therapy. I actually had my 1 month follow-up this morning, and, it was interesting because there was some things that were like clearly working and some things that clearly weren't. And so we made some changes, but one of the things that's been clearly working is that my resilience to stress has been way better. And so I'm finding that as I get sort of thrown these curveballs, it's not affecting my mood the way it did with the Paleo Approach. So I'm kind of going like, oh yeah, that's gonna mean a later bedtime, that's annoying, oh well yeah, I could, you know, it's just I'm sort of feeling like I'm rolling with the punches a bit better. And I really credit, you know, the whole strategy that I have with my functional medicine doctor sort of to, you know, help out my adrenal glands and balancing hormones. And we realized that we realized today that there's a fairly significant but minority fraction of women who, when they get put on DHEA as a supplement, instead of converting it into cortisol and testosterone, which was what we were hoping my body would do, they convert it to estrogen, which, given that I was estrogen dominant, is not cool. So we've now figured that out, taken me off of it, and then I'm starting a detox, which I think is really funny given the facial expressions I usually make when people say the word detox. But I'm doing a clinical detox, which is basically supplements. And I actually read through the entire, like, 200 ingredients list, and I knew everything, like, that was on it, and I knew what they all did, and that made me feel very comfortable agreeing to do it. But one of the things that it's going to help do is help clear out the excess estrogen that we accidentally made by putting on DHEA. But see, my mood is good. I'm handling it. I'm rolling with the punches. I'm also sleeping really well, and that helps too. So that makes me happy.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to sleep. I'm in the phase of the book where I'm sacrificing an hour or two every day, and it's no good. All right. So we've talked about our books. We've talked about how much fish is awesome. If you didn't listen to last week's podcast, you need to go back and listen to last week's podcast so you can understand why I would be willing to eat a Costco-sized can of tuna. I'm not saying that's the best source, but I'm saying it's a good one. And then I'll rebridge you back to where you were trying to take us before.
I believe it started with speaking of food.
Speaking of food.
Which we have been for like the last 20 minutes, so it's good.
So today's topic is related to maybe falling off the wagon sometimes. What are we calling this formally?
We're calling this the Self-Control and Discipline Show. And I think, you know, when I think of that, part of it is falling off the wagon and getting back on. Part of it is getting through transition and making any kind of change that requires effort. And then part of it, I think, is maintenance, because I think there's a certain amount of self-control and discipline, depending on people's, you know, health history and sort of emotional attachment to food and things like that. But there's a, for me, certainly, there's a certain amount of self-control and discipline that just comes to maintaining positive change day in and day out. So there's a lot of moving pieces here that I think amount to the same thing, which is, how do you make a good choice when you really want to make the bad choice?
I think that's a good question. I think we'll have a lot of different answers based on, you know, the different things that work for us. I know for me, I just do a lot better if I don't go off course, you know, and I know that that's like hippy dippy. Maybe it sounds too like obvious, but I don't mean to simplify it. What I mean to say is, and we've talked about a lot in the show before, is that, you know, that, oh, let me have this one piece of gluten-free cake, turns into like, we have this book called Sweet Tooth that we read to the kids. Probably some of the parents out there have heard of it, but it's a book about a boy who has a sweet tooth, and the sweet tooth is literally talking to him all the time, telling him to eat like sugary foods to feed the sweet tooth. Like, that's literally what happens, because my brain gets one sniff of, you know, like refined sugar, and it goes nuts. Like, it goes nuts and just wants it all the time. And then it makes it so much harder to resist than if I had just never had the cake to begin with. And so for me, a lot of my strategies around self-control and discipline revolve around finding foods that comfort me if and when I feel like I need it, or foods that still make me feel like I'm getting to indulge or celebrate or whatever the instance is, without necessarily derailing me. And then the reason we're doing this show, admittedly, is because Sarah sent me a text message and was like, what should we do our show on? And I was like, what did I say exactly? Something like,
hang on, I'll tell you. It amused me enough to be like, okay, then we're going to do it. How to be motivated and, oh, stop eating. I can't say that word. And maintain our clean rating. And then you wrote, oh, wait, I need to listen to that one.
Yeah. So the expletive was about the types of food that I'm drawn to right now. And that all started for me in Austin at Paleo FX. Like, I had been 100% clean eating. I was losing so many inches, and I was making so many gains, and I wasn't even interested in yucky food. I'll call it yucky food because I have to convince myself that that's what it is. And I told myself, like, I had been so clean for so long, and my competition was over, and I was going to be with friends, and I was going to be on vacation, and it was totally acceptable and okay for me to have a drink. It was totally okay and acceptable for me to have grass-fed gelato. And in principle, those things are true. Like, it was totally okay. That was my choice, and I made it. The problem that I had is that then, coming out of vacation, I find every excuse there is in the book to not be strict again. And it's been a serious, serious struggle for me for the last couple of weeks. Easter didn't help.
I call this the slippery slope.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And, you know, because then Easter came and there's a bunch of junk in the house and I want to eat it. And then, you know, there's this excuse and that excuse. And yesterday was a cookbook shoot and we shot all the holiday foods. And oh my gosh. And I should have gone to the gym after, and I should have taken all the food to the gym and left it with the strongman guys, because they are trying to bulk up and been like, here, eat this batch of brownies and blondies and marshmallows and Cinnabons. Like, you know, have at it. No,
you made Cinnabons for your book?
No, technically, we're not calling them Cinnabons. We bought this really cool Cinnabon pan that makes everything look like Cinnabons. So we made our monkey bread in the Cinnabon pan, and then we made like an
your
apple
monkey
crumb
bread
cake.
Is the bomb.
Thank you. So the monkey bread's going in Real Life Paleo, and like I said, Real Life Paleo has only, I think, like 35 what we're classifying as phase one or treat recipes, but it has twice as many nutrient-dense foods. So for the majority of time as we've been working on this cookbook, we've been eating really healthy foods. It just happened that we were doing the holiday shoot and, like, all of the holiday stuff is not good.
It makes sense visually for a cookbook.
Right. So, anyway, my point is that, you know, in normal circumstances when we worked in the cookbook, I had absolutely no problem, like, getting in my car. Well, first of all, I would give the food to, like, Sam and Amy. Sam is the paleo babysitter. She's like our awesome new team member and helps out and watches the kids sometimes for us. She comes often on Cookbook Sundays, and then obviously Amy's here. So usually I like push the food off on them, and I'm like, all right, no problem. All we've got left is tuna salad because that's what I ate last week. But this week, I don't know. I was sitting in front of the food and I like couldn't let go of it. I'm like, no, I don't want to take it to the gym because then it'll be gone. Like, that is not a healthy mindset for me. That is when I know that that is not a choice that I'm making. That is that is a slippery slope. It's totally like emotional addiction. It's all the things that I work really hard to avoid. And so, I think it's important. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily have done this show on my own, but, it's important to like acknowledge that those things are happening, which is what I'm doing right now, and then say, okay, how can I fix it? You know, and that I'll tell you the things that I personally have to do to focus on fixing it is to stuff myself with healthy food and water and like things that are healthful, but that make me feel so full that I don't want to eat other foods. And then I also find like a short list of foods that I tell myself, you know, at 9 p.m. at night, if you still want to eat, you can have bacon, you can have chaffee, you can have tea, you can have a fruit. You know, like I tell myself, these are foods that are, you know, can still either nourish you or don't derail you, and you don't have to feel guilty about them. And this can be your transition back onto the wagon. And then I know what my rules are that I define for myself. And that's often really super helpful for me. So, well, I know we'll talk more about it, but it says in the show notes that you wanted me to talk about my problems.
Well, because I thought we've got some questions that really have more to do with transition and the issues around self-control and discipline. And some of the other stuff that can happen with transition from going from, say, a gluten-free diet or a standard American diet to a paleo diet. And I think that's one place where self-control and discipline is required and helpful to get through that transition. But for you and I, because we've been paleo for so long, you know, I really felt like it was important for us to talk about our personal struggles because I think it's important for people to know that, especially if they come from a place like what I did, which was, you know, binge eating disorder, obesity, morbid obesity, and, you know, compulsion to eat, compulsion to overeat, and really food addiction. I mean, I still have an emotional attachment to food, and I still have emotional responses when I eat. And they're muted compared to what they were when I started this journey, but they're still there. And I still find, you know, if I don't get enough sleep or if I'm stressed, I have really, really strong cravings for sugar and, or even better, something fatty and sweet. And so it's something that I felt as I was putting together an outline for this show, that discussion of, you know, what is it like in 2 or 3 or 4 years? You know, I don't want to make people think that it's this hard when they're struggling to first go paleo. It is not that hard. It is nowhere near as hard as it is at the beginning for me now. But there still is an element of, you know, being mindful to stay on track every once in a while, falling off the wagon. And I'm the same way. You know, I fall off the wagon and it's sugar. It's not like I'm eating, you know, Krispy Kreme donuts, but I start eating semi-sweet chocolate. And semi-sweet chocolate is really, really sweet. Or I start making paleo desserts more. I start eating, even sometimes, you know, I'll consider it falling off the wagon when my fruit intake starts to get really excessive. Like, I normally allow fruit in my diet, but when it starts being like 6, 7, 8, 9 pieces of fruit a day, I feel it. Like, I feel the inflammation that that amount of fructose is causing in my body. And I know it's not good for me. And then I crave it and I want a piece of fruit instead of a vegetable or a healthy protein. And when that starts to happen, that's that slippery slope, or halfway down the slippery slope. And so I just kind of thought it'd be really interesting for people to hear about the part where, you know, it's the maintenance, right? Like, how do you make these great changes, lose a bunch of weight, get really, really healthy, and then how do you maintain it? Because there's some really, really sad statistics about the very low percentage of people who maintain significant weight loss after, you know, going on a diet to lose weight. And part of that is the difference in both mentality and what you're actually doing when you approach something as a diet versus a lifestyle. But a huge part of that is also, I think, understanding that getting, you know, that the journey is never over, that it changes and the challenges change, but it's, you know, wanting to be healthy is always something that requires effort and mindfulness. And it's something I really wanted to share with people, especially if we have any listeners who are, you know, just starting on paleo, or maybe even listening to us to get more information to figure out if they want to do paleo and figuring out if it's a good choice for them. You know, I kind of wanted to sort of say, you know, it can be a tough transition for some people in the beginning. Not everybody. Some people have really easy times with it. And if you're coming from a place of especially eating disorders, which Stacey and I both come from, there's an element to this journey that is psychological that doesn't go away with just changing what you eat or changing how much activity you get or changing the size of your waistline. So there's an element to this journey that is a mental health element, and it's a much longer fix that requires really proactive behavior. Did I just say all the same things you said in my own way? Pretty much.
But better. I mean, it's cool. The one thing that I would say, because I do think that we have a lot of veterans who listen to the show as well. And so the one takeaway that I would share with people is something I actually heard on the Balanced Bites show. I think it was Stephanie Ruper on that show. I mean, let's all have a moment of not being shocked that the three of those women would come up with something stupendous. But I actually pulled over my car on the side of the road and started crying when they started talking about the most difficult part of their journey with health, oftentimes for people, is maintaining health. And in particular, for people who have influenced others. And yes, of course, Sarah and I are in a position where the spotlight is on us, but I mean, even in your day-to-day life, like if your family's made a big deal out of being proud of your weight loss, it can feel really overwhelming. Like, you have to keep and maintain your weight loss for another person or do something for someone else. And I think, you know, at the time, this is like a year ago, I pulled over my car and started crying because I was just feeling so overwhelmed with this burden of, at the time, I had gotten down to my lowest weight and then Wesley weaned, and I had an adrenal fatigue and an autoimmune flare, and I wasn't moving or exercising, and I put on like 15 pounds, and it wasn't muscle. Like, I'm putting on muscle now, but that's not what that was at the time. And I had so much emotion over like not being in control and feeling overwhelmed and feeling beholden to other people. And I think part of the self-control aspect of what we're talking about is really empowering yourself, not just with food, but in your own life as well. Because I think that really transitions, like, if you feel comfortable, confident, and in control of your path and what you're doing for yourself, then it really translates into your ability to control what goes into your mouth or what exercises you do, or if you don't procrastinate on a test. Like, I just think all of that is really tied to the self-confidence and self-control in general. And so I think everyone should, you know, take a moment to kind of kumbaya with themselves and say, like, you're either already on the journey or you're thinking about the journey or you're transitioning into the journey. And no matter what you're doing, you're making a conscious choice to live a healthier life. And, you know, you obviously need to try to make the best choices you can, but not always do you make perfect choices. And if during that time that you don't make a perfect choice, if you start to beat yourself up and feel really badly about it and start thinking about all the things that you've done and all the people you've let down and, oh my gosh, I feel so badly, I haven't gone to the gym, which is what happens to me, then, you know, I start eating more sugar, and then I don't want to go to bed because I'm hopped up on sugar, and then I don't get enough sleep, and then I crave more sugar the next day, and then because I'm tired because I didn't get enough sleep, I don't want to go to the gym, and then I feel badly, and then I eat. So I'm not saying that, like, I'm in this super negative place right now, because I'm not. I just went to the gym. I'm saying it becomes really easy to start that snowball effect and go down that path, and it happens very quickly. I know Sarah and I have podcasted about it, so I'll speak for her when I say I know that it happens to Sarah as well. Maybe not specifically the same way I'm talking about it, but we all have our own triggers. And you know, the first and most important thing is really telling yourself what you want and then sticking to it. So we'll talk a little bit about self-control and transition later, but I wanted to bring up for the people who aren't transitioning that it's really important that you think of yourself as being in control and being confident with the choices and the lifestyle that you're leading already to enable and empower yourself to, you know, feel good and feel positive and continue on that path. And if you make a choice that's not the same, to do everything you possibly can mentally and emotionally to get over that and move on, and to not beat yourself up and to not linger on it and to not worry about it. You can't change it after it's happened. So just decide what you're going to do tomorrow. You know, like, go to bed and say, tomorrow I'm going to wake up and I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. And just tell yourself, this is what I'm going to do. Don't make it an option. Don't say I'm going to try. You know, commit to yourself and have that respect for yourself to say, this is what I'm going to do, and then do it. And, you know, even baby steps. Like, I told myself today I wasn't going to eat any of the treats that were in the house. Like, I can't change that I had way too much paleo treats yesterday, but I can decide to not do it today. And, you know, when I entered the house and I looked on the counter and there were brownies and there were things that I wanted, like, I said to Matt, where is dinner? Give me a salad. Like, I was like, put the salad in my face right now. And so it's, you know, I feel really, really proud of myself that that's a choice that I made. And perhaps I feel a little too proud of myself, but that's okay, because it's my choice to make for myself. So I don't really care what anybody else thinks.
No, I think that pride also gives momentum to making those changes and sort of getting back on the wagon. So I don't think you can feel too proud of yourself.
Awesome.
I also think that you just said some, like, amazing things, and I was, like, sitting there wishing I had pom-poms so I could be, like, a cheerleader.
Aww.
Do you want to get a little bit geeky?
Always.
Next segment is Science with Sarah, where I take a moment to explain the details and the whys.
Science. So, because today's show sort of is themed around self-control and discipline, I thought it'd be interesting to do a more broad strokes Science with Sarah rather than get into super details, which everyone knows I like to do too, but really talk about some of the things that can affect self-control and discipline, or your ability to have control, your ability to have inhibited behavior, which sort of means have an idea of something that you can do, but you have the ability to then choose not to do it, as opposed to uninhibited behavior, which people might be sort of familiar with that idea from maybe things they've done while drunk. That would be a really classic example of uninhibited behavior. Well, this is actually the same concept when we're talking about self-control and discipline, just not quite as exaggerated. And there's a variety of things beyond alcohol consumption that can affect your ability to have self-control. One of the major ones is stress, or especially chronic stress. So that's sort of chronically elevated cortisol or dysregulated cortisol that people suffer when either, you know, life is just getting in the way and it's just there's an inability to reduce stressors, but also when people find themselves not having the skills to mitigate stress, so not having the skills to be resilient. And that, you know, that I don't want people to blame themselves if they're feeling stressed. But what I mean is that there's certain steps that people can take, but there's also sort of certain personality traits that are, you know, just lead to resilience. Whether you have those or not, you can do things like go out for a walk, meditate, get more sleep. Those are the types of activities that can help reduce basically the biological effects on your body from stress. So when stress builds up, you know, studies very conclusively show, and I can tell you from personal experience, this is true for me, that people crave high energy foods. Now, some people will crave high carbohydrate foods. Some people will crave high fat foods, and some people will crave both high fat and high carbohydrate foods. And I would put myself in the both category. And that can be from acute stress. So, you know, one unusually bad day and you come home and you really want to, you know, pint of Ben and Jerry's, or that can be the slow buildup of chronic stress. What's interesting about that behavior, that sort of link between stress and food cravings, is that actually eating those high energy foods, at least in mice, is decreasing the anxiety and depression that can be caused from chronic stress. So it kind of has this protective effect on the brain. But that's short-lived, because then what happens is you get weight gain, you get inflammation with that weight gain, you get insulin resistance, and that then has all kinds of other effects on the brain that actually, you know, propel depression and anxiety. But it's one of those situations where the body's reactions to stress are designed for handling acute stress. They're not designed for handling chronic stress. So we are designed to either run away from a lion or fight the lion. And at the end, we either survived or we're dead and we're relieved and the danger's over. And so we're really wired for acute stressors, you know, something sudden, stressful, intense, but then when it's over, it's over. And the chronic stress that's part of our lives today is not something that people as a whole experienced prior to sort of civilization. And it's not something that our biochemistry is really wired to be able to handle. So stress is sort of the number one thing, or at least the number one thing on my list, that can affect self-control and discipline. Sleep, or more aptly lack thereof, has been shown to have pretty significant effects on how much people eat. It increases hunger, and people will eat an average of 20% more after one night of not getting enough sleep. So one night of like 4 or 5 hours of sleep will cause people to eat an average of 20% more. But it also has been shown to lead to uninhibited behavior. So it's also shown to lead to bad impulse control. And that's sort of across the board, but we see that especially with food choices, because that's one of the easiest places to be uninhibited for most people. Micronutrient deficiencies can make it hard to have self-control and discipline, in part because when you're deficient in micronutrients, that can lead to food cravings. That can also lead to things like hormone imbalances, insulin sensitivity problems. I mean, all these other things that then have sort of like the cascade of effects that eventually leads to intense cravings, which the more intense the craving is, the more difficult it is to be disciplined enough to not give into it. Neurotransmitter imbalances are a major contributor to self-control and discipline problems. And the two neurotransmitters that are sort of best understood in terms of their relation to discipline are dopamine and serotonin. Dopamine is the neurotransmitter that's sort of part of the reward pathways in the brain. So it's part of understanding that if you learn something or if you do something, there's a reward at the other end. And that's really important for life. but what happens in sort of a compulsive eating disorders, binge eating disorders, obesity, and even drug addiction, it's actually all the same pathways with dopamine, is that we think that there's a decrease in a particular receptor to dopamine that is actually important for impulse control and is leading to that behavior where you're giving into the compulsion or giving into the craving or the addiction. In terms of serotonin, serotonin regulates things like sleep, really importantly, mood, the sensation of pain, and appetite. And so when you have high serotonin, generally you feel better. And it turns out that high carbohydrate diets, and this may be why I think both Stacey and I experience when we sort of cheat with a little bit of sugar, that's the beginning of the slippery slope. For me, that's the number one thing that would cause me to derail. And it may be because high carbohydrate diets increase serotonin. And so it may be sort of, it's again kind of programmed into that food reward pathway. And we actually know that there's two different serotonin receptors that are increased in obesity and addiction. There's some really big commonalities there in terms of brain chemistry that are also linked to the reward system and dopamine. And that may be where this whole system kind of links. There's also a link to insulin resistance and leptin resistance. So if you're consistently eating a high sugar diet, or also with leptin, you can get leptin resistance from eating high sugar, but also eating erratically. So you can actually get leptin resistance from fasting for a long period of time, or sort of doing juice fasts, juice cleanses, those kinds of things can affect leptin. Being actually too low carbohydrate can cause leptin resistance for a prolonged period of time. And so insulin resistance and leptin resistance are both known to increase appetite themselves because they're hunger hormones, but they also feed back to dopamine and serotonin, and they have downstream effects on fat metabolism. So they actually make it harder to access stored energy, which then makes you feel tired and can actually increase the sensation of appetite and cravings for sugar. And the last thing on my list for something that can affect self-control and discipline is something that people are going through. This is specific to transition, or it can be specific to any time where you're sort of dramatically reducing carbohydrates, and that is the requirement of a metabolic shift. So the normal healthy state for the human body is to be able to switch back and forth from using sugar as fuel or using fat as fuel, depending on what's available. And to really easily go, okay, well, after meals, we've got sugar in the bloodstream, we'll use sugar fuels. Between meals, we don't have sugar in the bloodstream, so we'll use fat as fuel. Or we used stored sugar until that's used up, and then we'll use fat. And the body just goes, oh, whatever's there, I'll use it. And that's basically considered, you know, a healthy and resilient metabolism. But what happens when we are sort of consistently overeating or consistently eating too high a carbohydrate diet, especially refined carbohydrates, is that our bodies get much, much better at using sugar for fuel. and it becomes harder and harder to access stored fat as fuel. So when you reduce your carbohydrates, you reduce that sugar source, and then there's a lag time between when you do that and when your body actually figures out how to access stored fat. And that lag is what, you know, often people call carb flu when they're transitioning to a paleo diet or a low carb carbohydrate diet. It can last anywhere from a couple of days to 3 or 4 weeks, depending on the person, and basically sort of depending on how metabolically broken the person was, you know, that, so whether or not that person had prediabetes or, you know, insulin resistance, even if it wasn't leading up to sort of prediabetes or type 2 diabetes. Those things can prolong the amount of time it takes the body to shift to a healthier metabolism. But because the ability to access stored energy is reduced when you're going through that shift, the things that you feel are things like hunger, fatigue, cravings for sugar. And it's sort of the body's way of sort of saying, you know, hey, we're used to burning sugar and we don't have sugar. Let's eat some sugar. And that feeling of I don't have stored energy, which is sort of how you feel even though you do, can make it really, really hard to, you know, exert self-control and discipline and sort of, you know, most of us have to kind of muscle our way through those transitions. So to finish, I wanted to sort of briefly touch on some of the choices that people can make to help mitigate all of those contributors to an decreased ability to have self-control. And actually what's really cool is that all of these choices actually affect all of the sort of problems that can make it hard to have discipline. So what you can do to improve your ability to have self-control and your discipline is manage stress. That means both reducing stress where you can, so taking stuff off your plate, changing the hours that you work, asking somebody for help. It also means becoming more resilient to stress or managing stress, which means going for walks, taking up yoga, spending time at the beach, learning how to meditate, going to bed earlier, getting more sleep, having fun, making time for a hobby. All of those things help reduce the effect that stress has on the body. Increasing sleep, which helps manage stress and has the benefits of actually getting enough sleep. Most people need between 7 and 10 hours a night. Although some studies will say that a healthy person needs more like 7 to 9. You can increase nutrient density. That helps from a variety of standpoints. It helps from a brain health standpoint. It helps actually if you're eating a lot of omega-3s, for example, that helps reduce the effect that stress has on the body. And it also deals with cravings that might be coming from micronutrient deficiencies. Eating probiotic foods like sauerkraut, or kombucha or kefir, that also could mean taking a supplement. But that actually can help dramatically affect neurotransmitters if you are looking after the right types of bacteria in your gut. It can also affect or help decrease inflammation, which can actually affect many of these systems as well. Eat plenty of vegetables, especially non-starchy vegetables for the fiber. That actually can be really, really helpful in detoxifying, and it can actually be really, really helpful in restoring some hormone balances and restoring proper appetite signals. Exercise, I don't want to miss that one. Exercise affects all of those things. It can help regulate neurotransmitters. It can help you sleep better. It can help reduce stress. It can help actually, if you're going through that metabolic shift and transition, it can actually help push that shift to happen faster. So getting good quality exercise, especially resistance training where you're, you know, building muscle, that can actually help force that transition into a healthy metabolism faster. And the last thing is to be patient. because if you're dealing with any of those situations, even making positive changes, nothing's going to be an instant fix. So you need to be persistent and keep going and be patient.
I'm trying really hard to be patient with myself.
It's hard. I mean, just it's not, especially when you're challenged with like more than one thing. And sometimes it's not easy to know what is the problem. And, you know, and sometimes you do need to actually, you know, talk to a healthcare professional and see if there's something else going on, because there can be other things that you cannot fix with diet and lifestyle. You know, for example, in my body, probably due to chronic stress, but I had major hormone imbalances, and I can't fix that with food. Like I can stop the problem from getting worse, but my body's not going to magically know what a normal level of progesterone is just because I tried to sleep more. Like, I was already doing that. It doesn't work. So sometimes there is a case for, hey, bring these concerns to a healthcare professional, and especially somebody who's an integrative medicine practitioner or functional medicine specialist, and see if maybe there's something that actually can, you know, it can be a root cause of, you know, not feeling like you have self-control.
Well, now that we've taken up an hour, maybe we should think about a question or two.
Yeah, maybe just one or two.
Questions and Answers, where we answer questions submitted by you through the contact form on our websites, paleomom.com and paleoparents.com.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
So this question is from Gemma from Melbourne, Australia. Hello, ladies. I've recently converted to a paleo lifestyle 3.5 weeks ago. I, for the most part, feel great, albeit an occasional tiredness, and have lost weight and toned up without effort, even though this wasn't my goal, and I'm just looking to change my diet for purely being the healthiest I can be and for having more energy in my daily life. The only issue I've had recently is during the day I have been having dizzy spells, sometimes even vertigo, where my head spins quite severely and I have to stop where I am. I am not calorie restricted at all, am eating plenty for my height and weight, protein and fat in every meal, and 2 or 3 different vegetables. I eat maybe 1 or 2 pieces of fruit a day, as well as a green smoothie, mostly consisting of kale, spinach, and a small handful of berries and coconut water. And on top of all that, drink a bunch of water as well. I did a little bit of Googling, and some suggested that after converting to a paleo diet, you are naturally receiving much less salt, and this could cause dizziness. Other places suggest it's a carb withdrawal type symptom. You both seem very knowledgeable when it comes to the science and health side of diet, so I was hopeful you might have a concrete explanation for me being dizzy quite regularly. Thank you in advance. P.S. I've recently discovered your podcast and have been listening to it any spare moment, like walking my dog, taking the train, etc. It's brilliant, and I thank you both for its existence.
Oh, thank you. So it's interesting because I've had vertigo. So my immediate thought before she even got to the "I read online that it could be salt" was, what is her salt intake?
Yeah.
She also then said that she drinks a bunch of water, which made me feel like even more so that it would be a salt issue. My experience with the carb flu, as you referred to earlier, and as she was probably reading online, is much more about kind of energy and also actual kind of headache, body ache, that sort of thing. Vertigo, as she calls it, where her head spins, could be low blood pressure, could be, you know, coincidentally, maybe she's got water in her ear canal, who knows. But if I were going to make an immediate suggestion to her, it would be to do what I've been doing, because I had vertigo and have been recovering. I no longer have it, fortunately. It was caused by dehydration. So instead of drinking a bunch of water without salt, which is what I was doing and washing me out, I switched to mineral water, which has some benefits and electrolyte and can help hold things in. And I've also been putting natural sea salt with sea vegetables on my food as often as I can. I naturally have low blood pressure, and when I was going through my dehydration vertigo, I had really low blood pressure. And so one of the things that was identified was that increasing my salt would help increase my blood pressure, which would then make me less dizzy. So from my personal experience, that's what I can say. But even before that, when she was saying that it was happening to her and then she said she drinks a bunch of water, I would have asked about her salt intake, because it is very true that when you go paleo, hopefully you're not eating any more boxed goods that have been fortified with who knows what and packaged in EGAD's amount of iodized salt. And now you're, you know, cooking for yourself, and it's really important that you add high quality salt. You know, Sarah and I use different kinds of salts for different kinds of cooking, but almost always there's salt in our food. So if it's, you know, Himalayan pink sea salt, if it's kosher salt, if it's, I use sea veg sea salt. There's pretty much no going wrong with like a thing that's a sea salt on it somewhere.
Yeah, some kind of unrefined salt. And the benefit to that is you're not just getting sodium and chloride, but you're getting all of the other trace minerals. Like, I think I read that Himalayan pink salt has like 84 trace minerals. So you're getting a lot of other good stuff that your body needs on top of sodium. And of course, sea vegetables also, you know, are full of minerals. So a sea vegetable based salt, or like a Celtic sea salt, gray salt, would, all of those will have tons of trace minerals. I don't know if kosher salt.
Yeah, I just like the taste of that.
I don't know if kosher salt is particularly, I think it's just, isn't it just non-iodized but refined?
I think so. I haven't really looked into it, but I finish everything with the sea veg, sea salt, and then when Matt cooks, he usually uses either sea salt or kosher salt. It's just that for flavoring food, sea salt can be difficult, so like you have to get used to using it, and you know, like we get the big flaky kind. This isn't helping at all. What I'm saying is,
Eat salt. So other than the kosher salt thing, because I actually think I use pink salt almost most of the time, and I think it does an amazing job of flavoring food. So other than that little piece that we disagree on, I was going to say all the same things that you said. And I just wanted to echo the possibility of something like an inner ear infection. Those are actually really difficult to see with an ophthalmoscope. Is that what they're called?
Are you asking me if I know what it's called?
I think they're called ophthalmoscopes. But, you know, the thing that the doctor uses to look inside your ear, if it's an inner ear infection, that's actually really difficult to diagnose. But the dominant symptom of that is dizziness and vertigo. And depending on whether or not it's bacterial or viral, you can try antibiotics, or you can try and just support your body's immune system by doing the whole nutrient density thing. I don't know if, you know, even a doctor who suspects an inner ear infection would be able to tell you if it's bacterial or viral. So either way, supporting the immune system is sort of a no-brainer. And so that just basically means like increasing consumption of organ meat, seafood, and vegetables, which it sounds like, I mean, she mentions eating lots of vegetables. So basically, you know, making sure that her meat is sometimes organ meat and sometimes seafood. And sometimes there can be some dizziness and vertigo symptoms that are associated with stress. I don't know if this is likely in this case, but just as a heads up that, you know, especially if you're finding the change of food to be stressful on your body, you know, it especially seems to happen in women that we will have a cortisol response to especially reductions in carbohydrates or reductions in meal frequency. And especially if you have like a history of anxiety, it is possible that actually the vertigo is caused by increased stress, just as a, I don't think it's as likely as salt, but it's also a possibility.
True that.
All right. One more question, just because we're being generous and the tornadoes haven't hit Georgia yet. This question is from Claudia from Amsterdam. We have a very international podcast.
Indeed. Guten Tag?
No, that's German. Do you know Dutch? I don't know any Dutch.
Well, you could talk French.
Probably her.
I could talk Australian.
You can talk Australian. Can you really talk Australian, or can you just embarrass yourself Australian?
Mostly embarrass myself. I have two Australian friends other than that paleo show, so I guess that's five paleo friends. And I really like them all, the Aussies. So
I have never met an Aussie I didn't like.
I'm sorry, Claudia. I didn't mean to interrupt your question.
I've also never met a Dutch person. How do you... Dutch person?
Yeah.
A person from the Netherlands?
Interesting factoid about Stacey. She took like 6 years of German between high school and college and can't speak a lick anymore.
I lived in Germany for 3 months. I actually worked at the Deutsches Elektron und Synchrotron Laboratory in Hamburg. Just fun fact about me. I used to be a particle physicist. So, wait. Okay, our question from, and it's probably Claudia. It's probably not Claudia. All right. From however you pronounce your name, and I'm sorry if I totally Americanized it. Hi, ladies.
Americanized it? No, blame Canada.
Canadianized it? That doesn't work. I'm going to read the question now. Hi, ladies. First, I wanted to say how much I love the podcast and how helpful it is to so many people. Thanks for all the information you bring us and keep up the good work. So now for my question. I found the paleo diet because of a lactose sensitivity. After finding out I wasn't allergic or intolerant, I figured out it must be sensitivity because taking the test made it pretty clear to me. So I have been dairy-free for over a year and paleo followed sometime later. Although the cramps are gone, I have still been dealing with digestive issues. I have a lot of tests done, but no results. For the last 2 or so weeks, I've been experimenting by eating grains on a daily basis. This includes bread, so yes, gluten as well, and rice. I found that eating grains helps my digestion, which seems to be going too fast, and sometimes I notice that not all of the food has been digested, but eating grains slows it down to a normal bowel movement. But this made me feel bad as well. When I eat grains, I get really tired, not being able to get up in the morning and still be tired during the day, but not being able to sleep at night. My skin gets dry and upset. I even get headaches if I eat too much at once, brain fog, bad concentration, itchy scalp, cold, hay fever-like symptoms, and I think it affects my emotional state as well because I tend to feel more depressed or down after eating it. So basically, my question is, eating grains makes me feel bad. Not eating grains makes me feel bad. What should I do? Why does this happen? And or can you give me some tips on how to slow my digestion down in a paleo way? Your help is highly needed and very much appreciated. Thanks. Love you girls and all that you do.
I feel like this woman submitted this question on behalf of myself. Only it's like 2 years too late. So I would say I have a lot in common with this, and what I found and what Sarah alluded to earlier and what a lot of people have referenced with going paleo is that eating more carbohydrates and fiber-rich food is what really helps digestion. And so grains have both fiber and carbohydrate. So it could be that that is what is helping the digestion. I would say to focus on consuming more carbohydrate and fiber-rich paleo foods, vegetables mainly, and maybe white rice, and seeing if you still feel the negative side effects. I think it's great how self-aware she is of all the different things that are happening, both digestively and physically as a result of the grains. I think a lot of people aren't self-aware enough to be able to detect kind of both of those things. As I've talked about extensively on the show, digestion is really important. So I do think that, you know, solving this problem is super important. And even if that means that you need to eat non-gluten containing grains on, you know, a semi-regular basis, if you can figure out how to get them into your diet to not cause problems, if that's what you need to do, that's what you need to do. I personally attribute not having a gallbladder to my extremely sensitive digestion, and it definitely requires me to be very attentive to ensuring that if I'm eating fat, that I also need to eat carbohydrate. My body's just not able to digest large amounts of fat without carbohydrate. So, for example, I cannot even take my fermented cod liver oil in the morning and then have coffee with cream in it without eating some sort of carbohydrate. Like, my body can't handle even those super healthy, like easy to digest fats. My body can't handle that if I've been fasting all night long and then I put those two things in. I have intense digestive distress. That doesn't mean that my body has a problem with fermented cod liver oil or with grass-fed heavy cream. What it means is that I need a balance of macronutrients in order for my body to properly digest foods. So I've learned to be really attentive to my own digestion, as well as some other symptoms that I notice long-term when I'm not getting the right micronutrient ratio that comes from not having proper digestion. So that's probably a really complicated way of saying that I have to have the right macronutrients in order for my body to properly digest things in order for it to break down and properly absorb the micronutrients. Otherwise, not only do I have digestive problems, but I also am not absorbing the nutrients of the foods that I'm eating. And I see not just the immediate negative things that she has here, which all happen to me as well, but I get some nutrient deficiency symptoms long-term, which are really not good, really not healthy long-term. So I think it's very important to figure this out. And my biggest suggestion would be playing with macro ratios, with increasing carbohydrates and fiber, and then getting rid of the gluten-containing grains and seeing if the non-gluten grains still are causing problems. If it were me personally, I'd get rid of all grains, add paleo forms of carbohydrates and fiber, see how I feel, and if I still want to play with things after that, add in maybe rice, buckwheat, and some of the other non-gluten containing grains to see how that affects me positively or negatively.
So the only two things that I would add, one is that soluble fiber especially can be helpful for slowing down peristalsis or slowing down transit, which sounds like would be useful in Claudia's case. And that, of course, is what you're going to get from more, you know, starchy roots and tubers, like eating more, you know, sweet potato or plantain or taro root or cassava or these other sort of paleo dense carbohydrate starch sources. The other thing that can help regulate peristalsis, so both melatonin and serotonin regulate peristalsis. So doing things that look after circadian rhythms, like being outside during the day, making sure you go to bed at a good time, getting enough sleep, being in a dim environment in the evenings, you know, getting some activity, all of those things can be actually really helpful for regulating peristalsis in the gastrointestinal tract. But also, both melatonin and serotonin are based on the amino acid tryptophan, So eating more tryptophan-rich foods can actually boost production of both. And the richest foods in tryptophan that also don't have amino acids that compete with tryptophan to cross into the brain are organ meats. Wasn't it like sea lion liver or something like that was the highest source?
Yeah, good luck finding that, Claudia.
She's in the Netherlands. Maybe they have sea lions there. I don't know.
That's for totally where they live, for sure.
Okay, fine.
You heard me. It's fine.
I'm totally going to Google later where sea lions live. And if they live there. Or somebody could comment on the show notes and tell us. Are there sea lions in the Netherlands?
I don't think it's cold enough. But aren't they in San Francisco? Maybe it's not cold enough there either. I know nothing about geography. Just ignore and tell her what she needs to eat. Organ meat, sea lion kidney.
And seafood.
I think that might be more attainable. I'm not sure. I'm just thinking. Maybe.
This is where having a video podcast would be really cool because people could see the facial expressions and the hand gestures that I'm making right now. But then again, this is our clean rating.
This is why when we recorded a podcast in the same room, I couldn't make eye contact with you.
I was not making these kinds of facial expressions to you at that time.
I could just feel it coming.
You're like, I'm not going to be able to tease her if I'm looking her in the eye.
It was so uncomfortable. Okay. Awesome. That was like a real show. Look at us. We did like a whole thing. It was like a thing that we did each section.
We did. We rocked it.
Awesome.
So people should go leave us reviews on iTunes. Because we just did a good show. I'm only going to ask people at the end of good shows.
Oh, at the end of good shows. Hey, listen. Matt says all of our shows are good shows. Also, he gave me this like huge high five the other day that I want to share with you, which is that he said that he went back through the show and we're on something like, what is this?
89.
That's crazy. And we haven't missed a single week. So,
what?
I know, we've done check-in shows and we've done best of, but we've never missed a single week. And he told me, he shouldn't have told me this, but he told me that most podcasts, like, that is, like, never happens, that they, like...
Oh, we should totally start skipping
weeks. I know, once he told me that, I was like, does that mean that we can start skipping? And he like, literally finger-wagged in my face, and he was like, no, this is what makes your show great, you're consistent. Like, oh, is that what makes it good?
Something to listen to every week. Even if it's only 20 minutes of us complaining that we are too busy to do a show.
Totally. So anyway, I wanted to share his backwards compliment.
Thanks, Matt.
And let everyone know.
Awesome because, wait a minute, we're awesome because we're always here.
Exactly. That's all we got to do is show up.
All right.
So this is 89, which means we're approaching 100. Maybe people can leave in the comments or email us, what you want us to do for the 100th show, which will be super special. I remember when Rob had his 100th show, he had like Lauren Cordain on. I mean, we could get Rob or Lauren on probably, but we could also get them on when it wasn't 100. So I'm kind of looking for ideas from people, not just like, you know, a person to interview, but what you're looking for. If you liked the best of shows, if you like it when we have like a bazillion people on the podcast and we all talk over each other, maybe there's like a topic that you think would be super special to share on 100. I don't know.
You
let us know.
Feel free to tell us to take the week off.
But then we would still have 100 the next week, Sarah.
Oh, yeah. So there's going to always be a 100 show.
And I will also share with people that after the show airs, the following Tuesday will be my 4-year paleo anniversary.
Woo! Happy anniversary!
Thank you. Wesley will be turning 4 years old, and he is my anniversary marker because after I had him, I went paleo. So, although I was looking back at old photos today, which, by the way, totally made me feel better about my body. I totally transitioned in ways that, like, I don't remember transitioning. I, like, posted photos of these cookies that were, like, regular cookies with Rolos on the inside and white chocolate drizzled on top after I had gone paleo. I guess I was justifying it somehow in my head. Maybe it was my birthday. I have no idea. But it was interesting because I always say, like, just give up gluten. And I'm like, what was I eating gluten? Why was I eating gluten? And I literally, like, wanted to go back in time and smack myself. Like, what were you doing? So for those people who are transitioning and still making it work, neither Sarah or I pretend that we were even remotely perfect in the beginning. Sarah had a lot of gluten-free, like, processed type foods that, you know, she weaned her girls off of. We did the same thing. And evidently I made cookies with Rolos on the inside and don't even remember. So, but look at us now.
She posted a recipe?
It was on Facebook. Yeah. So I have a friend who's a professional cookie, like her, I think it's like Cookie Lady is her name. And she, like, makes cookies for Josh Groban in the green room of his concerts with, like, his face on it. Like, she's a crazy awesome cookie pastry chef baker. I don't know what you call her, but she's like a decorator. That's what she's really good at. But she also makes recipes, and she had won this award, like, you know, a state championship with these cookies that she invented. And she lives in, at the time, like, Nebraska. So I couldn't just have one of her cookies. I had to, in order to try them, and she's a friend of mine. So I was like, oh, I have to try your cookies, Nicole, the cookie lady. And so I made them, and I was like looking back at the pictures and I'm like, wait a minute, Wesley's in these photos. How could I eat these cookies? Like, that's not paleo. So, yeah.
So now we just need to encourage all pastry chefs and cookie experts to develop more gluten-free and paleo-friendly cookies to have backstage at concerts.
Totally. Well, actually, Nicole does do gluten-free cookies, so maybe we can put a link into the show notes. But I actually talked to her about potentially doing some superhero cookies for Wesley's birthday, but I think it's just too late at this point, and I called the local bakery because, as I also posted about recently, we are taking shortcuts because I have taken on too much and we are not baking a cake while we are finishing a cookbook.
Both of my kids had,
I remember,
from Gluten-Free Cutie for their last birthday.
Yeah.
And my mom did while she was here. It was her birthday while she was here, and we got a Gluten-Free Cutie cake.
I'm not eating it, though. I'm going to go on record right now and say I'm not eating it. Like, I really need to not eat cake, and I feel really good about myself lately. Like, after the Easter / Austin debacle. So yeah, I'm gonna get a Batman cake, and I'm gonna make it something that sounds disgusting to me so I'm not tempted. All right, everyone, now that you know way TMI about Stacey, I'm trying. I'm being honest with everyone. Maintaining this weight loss is not, it's not easy, and also maintaining health is not easy. It is a conscious choice and decision every time I put something in my mouth to make a good choice. And I do not feel badly about figuring out ways to enable good decisions and to, you know, pat myself in the back when I do good. So, positive reward.
And now we have a whole pile of people listening to this who are feeling like cheerleaders, and they're thinking, go, Stacey!
Don't eat the cake! Go eat your raspberries! Yeah, cool. All right, everyone, we'll be back again next week for episode 90. I think we've got some special guests on next week that hopefully will be a little bit new to you. I'm kind of excited about that potential show as being an interesting kind of discussion that hasn't been had in the paleo community yet, but we bloggers and cookbook authors kind of talk about amongst ourselves sometimes. So excited about that. You excited about that, Sarah? You probably don't even know what the show is.
I actually don't know who's coming on. So. It sounds exciting to me.
You're so excited now. I've got you pumped.
I'm going to be tired. I'm going to San Francisco next weekend. Oh, If anybody's listening to this, this is like the fifth ending of the show tonight, which is, if you're listening to this, I am in Corte Madera, which is just outside of San Francisco, at Book Passage. I'm doing a book signing Saturday at 4 p.m. I'll be there for like 3 hours. I'm chit-chatty and I give people hugs. Hopefully that gets more people there rather than scares them away. And I would love to meet you.
And you show up to events having recently showered, unlike me. So a hug should not scare them.
I do shower almost daily.
Awesome.
So I will talk to you next week after my whirlwind San Francisco trip. Have a good week.
Thanks. You too. See you. Talk to you later, everybody.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
I'm going to go make sure that we have food and water to survive in a collapsed hole in the laundry room.